welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friend and partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we are without one Ron Martin again this week, and I feel like Ronald's life is it's very busy and hectic, which is uncommon given that he's not traveling right now. So all the home stuff, all the Ashland home front activity is it must be coming to bear right now.
Yeah, I feel like there's an important question about this, which is he busy so that he like that's why he must go on retreats, or does the number of retreats then like compact all the busyness into a shorter amount of time? And so when he's back, it feels insane because he had to back out of this because of obligations. And I'm trying to figure out like what is the causation of this particular backing out?
Yeah, we need to get to the bottom of that because I feel like it has ramifications for the long-term, just the long-term health and viability of the program here. So we need to learn the rhythms of Ron so that we can better plan our year. You know, when we do our corporate retreat for the Happy Rant, we can write on glass and write flowcharts and really ascertain when we're going to get peak level Ron Martin. But Piper, we have to forge ahead, man. We have to do what we do and just make radio magic. And in doing that, I get to throw it to you to read a promo. And you've been getting some love online about your promo work, which to me is far overdue. I mean, this to me has been a long time coming. So I want you to do what you do best and give Dwell Bible your best possible promo right now.
When I love giving Dwell Bible my personal best because I actually really love this particular app. So for listeners who are new, Dwell is they've been a sponsor before and they've sponsored us for a few previous episodes. It is an audio Bible app, so you can find it in the App Store for Android or Apple. It's just Dwell Bible, and they have a whole setup to help you engage scripture through the audio medium, whether it's they have multiple narrators, they have musical backgrounds, they have reading plans, they have like clip and save kinds of things so you can listen to things on repeat to help you with reflection, memorization, or like I do, which is if you're getting ready to teach, it's helpful to just listen on repeat sometimes to just sort of massage that into your brain. That's actually something they just released. It's called Dwell Mode, which that name just makes me chuckle every time, and sort of it's a great name. But you can put things on repeat, any segment for whatever purpose that suits you. But the offer they have for listeners is a 33% discount. So their rates are already really affordable. Their annual subscription is already affordable, and it's then one third off of that. So I think it comes out to about $2 a month. Is the price for our listeners. So if you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant33, so dwellapp.io/happyrant33, you can sign up for it, subscribe, get that 33% discount. We will put that in the show notes. We will share it again on social media so you don't have to remember it. But again, dwellapp.io/happyrant33. So if you're somebody who's really busy, you spend a lot of time in the car, you are a mom or dad with young children, and so you don't ever get to sit down and read for 30 straight minutes or 20 straight minutes or 10 straight minutes. This is a really helpful thing. I use it more supplementally as opposed to, you know, as my standard scripture consumption, but it's great for either one, and at the price it works in both ways. So it's not going to break your bank.
Dude, so they've actually mastered the acoustics for homeschool vans too. So it's going to sound really nice in your 16 passenger. I'm telling you that.
Yeah.
Right now.
And so for like the little kids who are in like the third row, they are also going to get the same scriptural benefit because it sounds good at every row. Absolutely. I know in vans, that's a little tricky. Also great in like the Honda Odyssey, the Toyota Sienna,
absolutely.
The Dodge, Dodge Caravan.
Official
care about
vans
Fords.
Of Christendom, Piper.
Yeah, that's right.
Vans that one Joshua Harris is no longer going to be driving. That's teasing a topic
guy.
For a little bit later on. Yeah.
Yeah. So while Josh and his crew will not be listening to this, sadly, you can at a very affordable rate. So again, dwellapp.io/happyrant33. Check it out. It's an awesome app. I use it. Ted uses it. Ted recorded some audio for it that we're going to submit. I'm going to do the same. I think Ron's going to do the same. And so we may have a future promotion with us actually reading some scripture and then some just texts of our enjoyment for your listenership. So that's to tease something that is coming, but check out Dwell.
Baby, I'm stoked about that. I read a little Jane Austen, a little favorite psalm. Have you picked out your selection yet, Piper?
I haven't.
R. Kelly, you remind me of my Jeep. Maybe. I don't know. You don't have to say yes or no right now.
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny. I have a deep-seated fear of picking favorite scriptures, and I'm not sure if it's like evangelical guilt or just I'm bad at picking favorites of anything because I just like different things at different times. So I haven't picked any particular scripture to read or anything else. Because favorites are hard for me. So I might need to get some suggestions of what I should read.
Well, there you have it, Dwell Bible. Get Piper locked and loaded to just read the whole Bible. I feel like we need to make that deal happen. We need to get you another side hustle. Now that you're a man of the cloth too. You're a director. So maybe your schedule,
the special teams coach of Emmanuel Nashville.
Absolutely. Maybe you can finagle a retreat to get away and record the whole Bible for Dwell Bible. But we love those guys.
I feel like it would take a really long time.
I feel like it would too, and it'd be really, really hard. So tip of the cap to all the readers at Dwell. They do an amazing job. I mean, it's not just a platitude for a sponsor. They really sound great, and they don't stumble over the words like I would, I think. So, they just do really, really well. But
they pronounce the tricky Old Testament names with real confidence. Like they just roll through them like it's like they know what the name is. And they might be faking it, but if they are, they're doing a real good job.
They're really selling it. Yeah. They're really putting it over, man, for sure. Now, Piper, speaking of dialects and people who like to swing microphones around, I got a topic for you, and I want to parse this. Not so much from the content side, although we can get into that, but just from the technique side. So you sent us a clip of Ferdy doing what Ferdy does, just being at it again, kind of making up theology as he goes. And in this clip, people have probably seen it. It's called You Must Be Important. And the point that Ferdy's making in the clip is that if you're dealing with hard things in your life, that means that it's because God has huge, important plans for you. And the devil wouldn't send hard things into the lives of those for whom God didn't have huge plans. Now, that in and of itself is probably worth talking about, but to me, a couple of things stood out.
I'm not sure his theology is ever worth talking about, but you know.
I don't think it's worth talking. It wasn't worth him talking about.
I was going to say, kicking a dead horse gets a little tiresome at some point.
It does, and you know what? There are tons of Reform guys on the internet who probably would be happy to pick apart his theology. I want to talk about the delivery. Because to me, you've seen Scarface, right? The classic gangster film late 70s.
Sure. Al Pacino.
Yeah. Al Pacino. Yeah. Kind of Pacino's signature role. Now, to me, during the first like 15 or 20 seconds of this thing, it sounded like Ferdy was trying to sound like Tony Montana, saying like, say hello to my little friend in Scarface.
Right.
He was using that accent. He was affecting it. And Ferdy has gotten so tan, like I forgot for a minute that he was just kind of a gumpy white guy, like youth pastor type a decade ago. And I thought I was listening to Tony Montana. That's one thing. And now another thing, I have an English background, Pipe, so I can't help but see this stuff. So forgive me in advance for what I'm about to say. But I don't know that a microphone has ever looked more phallic than it did in this clip. And I'm just going to leave it to the audience to examine that and look into it if that's something that they feel led to do. But as an English guy, I mean, penises around every corner in my discipline, so you know, it was hard not to notice that from Ferdy. But Piper, what do you make of this clip, man, on those levels or others?
You know, I didn't have my finger on what was it that stood out about, I mean, aside from the nonsense, that always kind of stands out, but it's like, oh, it's just sort of on brand nonsense. But when you pegged the Tony Montana imitation, I was like, yes, but it doesn't sound like Tony Montana. It sounds like
a guy doing Tony Montana.
Right, exactly. It sounds like me as a college sophomore having just seen that movie trying to imitate Tony Montana, except I think I imitate accents better than Stephen Furtick does. And so, yeah, it definitely sounds a little bit like that. But then he just – everything about his voice is so affected.
Yeah.
It's just – he doesn't – He doesn't just say a sentence. You know, like when you and I are talking, or even when we're speaking, we say sentences. And we speak, and sometimes our cadence goes a little faster, or we speak with a little more, you know, kind of oomph behind it. But he's always like pretending to be something.
Yeah, you know, it's so fascinating.
It's very like Laurence Olivier or something like that, where you're like, oh, he's performing.
Are we calling our shot here in terms of Ferdy having an acting career?
No.
I mean, could we be looking at the next Leo or Brad?
No, wait. Remember where we started this, which was he sounds like a guy imitating Tony Montana. Like
he sounds like some white guy, Taylor, in 1996, like right. Doing Tony Montana. Some Van Vandersma guy.
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, some trust fund baby at Wheaton trying to do Tony Montana. Exactly.
I love it.
And so no, he does not have an acting career, although I could see the Kendrick brothers casting him in something.
I hope that happens. I'll see that.
I would watch that one. Yeah, if they cast him as like the what would he be? Well, because they've done football movies and prayer movies and cop movies and I don't even remember. They did a fireman
and it's good that we're doing this now because Ron hates stuff like this. He hates conceptual like media related stuff, but but we love it.
Yeah, this is our jam.
I think Ferdy I could see him as a high school football coach, which is I think they've already done. Didn't they already do
a football movie?
Like yeah, the guy the started praying, something. and then like he got a new truck, and his wife got pregnant. I think that was Facing the Giants.
I feel like little league coach is on the table, possibly like gymnastics coach.
Ooh, I like it. I like it.
Let's see.
Dude, what about like cop? Have they done a cop movie?
They did a cop movie. Yeah, they did one of those already.
Dang it, dude! I can see him in like a buddy cop movie.
Yeah,
but that's off the table. That's already been done.
But here's the thing:
I got it, Piper.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
I have one, but I want to hear yours too. I think the thing that the Kendricks haven't done that they're for sure going to do, like I'm not a prophet, but I feel like I know enough about like how they roll. They're gonna for sure do like a PTSD guy coming home from war kind of movie, and Ferdy will be the soldier. I'm calling my shot right now.
Okay, that is a really strong suggestion. I was going in an entirely different direction. So. Given Furtick's, I don't know if you've seen his spoken word video.
No, but I want to.
Okay, I will share. You can look it up. I think it's called something like Hello Haters or something like that.
Yes.
So and then he was a worship guy in the past. You can tell by his former facial hair, the little thing under his lip. I'm pointing at my lip, listeners. You can't see that.
Radio, not television. Maybe.
Right. Sorry. Wrong medium. But what about like a Christian 8 Mile?
Ooh, yes.
Where he's like a white hip hop artist.
Oh, I love it, dude. Or he's the producer. But no, I like him as the artist. And he's kind of got this gritty, hard scrabble existence. And he makes it. He gets I don't even know what the big Christian record labels are anymore, but he gets a record deal at the end of the movie from one of these big labels. He goes to the Devil Awards.
Yes. But the thing is, it wouldn't be Detroit because he's not quite hard scrabble enough. It would have to be like the mean streets of Raleigh Durham or something like that. You know,
it would be Raleigh Durham for sure. That's a great one. Nothing hipster. So it can't be like Asheville,
it can't be a city that's actually tough, and it can't be a city that's hipster. Like, it has to be one of these sort of like cities. So like,
I feel like Charlotte. No offense to anybody from Charlotte. I feel like it's just a beige southern city.
That's a good one.
That could be the palette for this.
Orlando.
For this
rap. He's from the mean streets of Orlando.
The mean streets of Orlando. I love it. Home of Disney and the Villages and. A whole bunch of cheesy Christian stuff. Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, grew up in the projects of, I don't know, Winter Park or something.
Yeah, by the projects, you mean a gated community in Winter Park.
That's right, yeah.
I love it.
Slightly less Spanish moss than the rest of the community.
Yeah, grew up going to, like, you know, Padres Grapefruit League games in the spring. But,
he couldn't afford to get in. He just watched through the outfield fence. That's the plot point.
That's good. Yeah, this thing is writing itself. We need to get our agent on the phone. We need to get Wolves on the phone to secure the movie rights for this.
Well, he listens. Maybe he'll come to us and say, you know, guys, that conversation you had that you no longer remember.
I went ahead and made you a 7-figure deal with the Kendricks. So
You know, yeah, for seven figures, I would consider writing that stuff.
Dude, I would write it for a lot less than seven figures. What would it take to get you to write the script? Keeping in mind that it would take not long. I mean, it'd probably take 2 weeks.
Are you and I co-writing this?
Dude, we're co-writing. So okay. What's the number? What's the number that gets us off the couch?
The number gets lower for a co-write because A, we got to share the money, and B, that's way more fun than me trying to grind out the work on this.
Oh, for sure, dude. Yeah.
So
this would be a blast.
I don't know what you say a number, and I'll probably go, yeah, that'll work.
I'm
not much of a negotiator.
If we split 20K, I would get off the couch. That means you and I, we both pocket 10 grand and maybe some percentage points.
I was
going to
say,
end.
if we get some sort of residuals on it, I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, 10 grand a piece in residuals. Kendrick family, if you're listening, we will do this movie. Even though, like, put aside the fact that we think probably very little of your other movies, but we'll do this one for sure.
I think you can drop the probably from that sentence and
exactly,
it's accurate.
Exactly. Put aside the fact that we may have never seen any of your other movies. But,
No, I have, because I have worked for multiple companies that had an interest in the books,
vested interest
of the books related to these films, and so yeah, there's more than one I've been sort of hoodwinked into seeing.
Dude, so your previous employer had a little piece of the action on those books. I bet those did well.
Two of my previous employers, and yes, they did very well.
There you go, man. You know what? We're doing the wrong projects, Piper. It's time we sold out in a big way, and I think the Furtick the Furtick 8 Mile movie is the best place to
what
start.
What would we call it, though? That's the thing. So, like, 8 Miles is a street in Detroit. That's like so Eminem comes from 8 Mile. So if we're talking Winter Park, like, it's got to be something
I think
like
call it Winter Park.
Yeah.
Because remember when, like, Linkin Park was a thing in the early 2000s? I feel like Linkin Park was for sure a band that Ferdy listened to when he was at, like, North Greenville College or wherever he matriculated. So, yeah, he was doing a little Linkin Park in the Discman, a little Fred Durst, you know, whatever the other kind of things were in that genre. So I think we call Winter Park. You know, we could open with a shot of, like, just beige suburban houses as far as the eye can see, behind a little gate, like through the gate, you know, through the gated community gate, little shot of the community pool.
Do you think we could sneak in Weezer's Rock in the Suburbs?
I think we could. That's going to be a lot of licensing money going to Weezer for that, but that's up to the Kendricks, but I like
it. It just seems to fit because, I mean, it would be sort of a subtle sort of shot at the whole ethos.
It would, man. It would. Now, I'm gonna vamp on this a little bit more because I'm enjoying it. So every 8 Mile type movie, which 8 Mile is really a sports movie, right? It's a sports rap movie. There's got to be a nemesis. There's got to be like an opponent. So who's gonna be Ferdy's big like opponent from the real world of Christian entertainment? Could be entertainment. Could be theology. Could be us, dude. Maybe we're the opponent.
Well, how much do we want to rip off 8 Mile? Because in 8 Mile, the whole premise was like white sort of trailer trash rapper tries to make it in a world of like actual like gangsters, African-American community, like he's the outsider, etc. I'm trying to figure out what the premise is here. Like, is he trying to make it as I like the idea of Ferdy as a rapper.
Uh-huh.
Like, do you think we could bring in like Lecrae to be like So it's not so much Lecrae is the nemesis. Lecrae is the guy he has to impress.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to get an audience. Yeah, got to get an audience with Lecrae. Lecrae's going to be the gatekeeper.
So like maybe he could serenade Lecrae's like hotel room from outside the window and like freestyle outside Lecrae's window to try to get his attention to get on tour with him as he heads off to his next big Reach Records tour.
Dude, no, and I got one too. I got another hot scene. So let's say, in trying to get this audience with Lecrae, he could serenade the hotel room, or he could like crash the green room at TGC. So we can bring in Conference Man to help us with these scenes. You know, although I don't know that Ron's ever been in a green room at TGC. He would love that. But yeah, like Ferdy crashes the green room. He's obviously not on the docket. But he knows Lecrae is going to be there, so he like bursts in and drops some some lyrics on the room, including like your dad would be in that room and Timmy K. We'll have to get some cameos, some high end reformed cameos.
I mean, so the movie starts with like, you got the beige suburban thing, and then he heads out in his his like 2004 Chevy Malibu to a youth camp to go be like he's the entertainment or like a youth evangelism night. So it's sort of like it's like playing bars and clubs before you make it as the big time. So he's doing like youth nights, he's doing tent meetings.
He's rapping the altar call.
Yeah, for sure.
And these kids are like, "Oh my gosh, this guy can rap. He's amazing." You know.
Yeah, so we need a lot of like we need a lot of teenage extras being real excited about his performances. But to be fair, that's probably just like anywhere, you throw out some pizza and Mountain Dew and teenagers will show up. So
absolutely, dude. I love it. This thing's writing itself. Wolks, if you're listening, get on the horn, get us a deal. We'll get off the couch for 10K and we're in. So hopefully by the time we record next, Piper, we may be screenwriters, which would be exciting. So much, much less exciting and kind of on a sadder note. It's weird to pivot in this way, but shortly after we recorded last week's at Pipe about Joshua Harris getting divorced, Joshua Harris, like 20 minutes after we wrapped recording, did another very curated Instagram post, this time of him looking pensively out over a body of water and explaining that he is no longer a Christian. So talk about how this hit you, Piper, and then I want to talk about Carl Truman's article a little bit just as we frame it up.
Just at sort of a visceral emotional level, I feel bad saying this. It hit me less hard than his announcement about the divorce.
Same.
I think because it was less surprising and maybe because the initial announcement sort of functioned as a kind of an
table setter
to it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, for sure.
And especially because over the last few years, he's moved from, you know, outspoken in ministry to quiet in ministry to leaving ministry, kind of heading into a marketing direction, you know, moved. I mean, he literally moved as far away as he could get from the church that he was part of all the way across the country. And then he recanted his book or books. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a, none of that is necessarily a negative direction. That can all be sort of that could all be a healthy direction. But there's been steps that you're like, yeah, that in retrospect, there's a removal from, there's hurt by, there's a lot of things going on there. I think the other thing that just struck me was just how like it, I don't know, it, the celebration of leaving the faith is something that's really hard to know how to react to and stomach.
I don't think we have to be happy about it.
Well, yeah.
Or even, I don't know, like, so sort of the, I don't know, the enlightened academic thing to do is to sort of stroke your chin and pontificate about it. But yeah, at a very visceral level, it's like, he's rejecting the self same thing that we embrace and celebrate. So yeah, like I'm not going to be happy or excited for the guy or even sort of feign enlightenment about the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm not, and I don't want to sit here and like parse his statement. I think just collectively. So for listeners who haven't read statement. So he, again, like Ted said, curated Instagram post. So it's this very, it's a photo of him staring off into the distance. Looks like, I don't know, Banff, Alberta or something. It's this beautiful lake with a mountain in the background, Pacific Northwest. Joffrey Lakes Provincial Park. What's that?
His back's looking good. He's been doing some shrugs and some rows.
Yeah, he definitely – he's looking very fit.
He's in the CrossFit phase of his life, which is usually when people get divorced and start doing crazy things. But
yeah, there's something to be said for people who get a little vain. You know, so the presentation of it is all very like reflective, positive. He still kind of, and then what he does is he tries to kind of fold in Christian values with the rejection of Christianity. Like he goes so far as to quote Martin Luther, but then embrace the values of kind of a genderless, society that like all sexual norms are okay. And he, you know, he's grateful to his Christian friends, but he's not part of this anymore. No market has, you know, has the corner on grace, et cetera, et cetera. So just it's just a super typical slide into some sort of postmodern, post-Christian, post-truth, like gobbledygook. Like it's nonsense. The statement is nonsense. Mm-hmm. And that's what's hard is like to see somebody who goes from I believe in Jesus to I believe in a nonsensical, indefensible perspective that the only thing about this that resonates with people is that they too reject the church.
Sure.
So people are not jumping on board with what he is saying. They're jumping on board with what he is not.
With what he's against.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can't jump on board with what he's about, you know, because it would be hard to pin it down for sure. So Pipe, you taught me some things off the air about Carl Truman that I didn't know. I've known Truman, only through his work. He's been the guy like to me, who's kind of blown the whistle on young reformed fame for the last like decade
very
and a half.
Consistently.
This thing. Yeah. Consistently, you know, and I've honestly, I've appreciated his words on that. He wrote a piece in First Things, which we could talk about First Things for a minute. First Things, I think, is like a different kind of smug than TGC. It may be the kind of smug that TGC aspires to one day. I think First Things is
TGC is going to have to bring up more people with doctorates if they want to pull that off.
Yeah, First Things is a great place to go for smugness. Like if you like smug kind of academic. Intellect swinging, you're going to like First Things. But anyway, Truman, he wrote a piece on there called Kissing Christianity Goodbye. I read it. I really liked it, actually. I thought it was kind of right on the nose in terms of trying to understand all this and sort of parsing, I guess, what brought Joshua Harris to this point in the context of sort of the reformed fame grab that started, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Which Truman, like you said, has been consistent about. So I thought it was good. It may have come off as a little bit, you know, snarky or bitter. I didn't really get a bitter vibe from it. I thought it was honest.
When Ron was still intending to be on this episode, he's the one who brought this to our attention. He used I wish he could have commented on it because he used the term. It seemed a little bitter. To me, the tone felt a little bit more. I told you so. Which is, I think that's a little different than bitter. You know, bitter has a sort of an anger to it. And this just seemed more like, look, guys, this is the thing that I've been throwing the flag on for a solid 15 years. And so he basically what he does is so he addresses the Harris situation, and then he just talks about the arrogance of young Restless Reform leadership. And he's speaking specifically of the younger leaders. So not the J.I. Packers, not the John Pipers, not the R.C. Sproul's whose theology influenced it, but the people who have been sort of neck deep in it, the Mark Driscoll's, James McDonald's, Tony Chavijan, C.J. Mahaney's, and now Josh Harris, et cetera. And so he kind of talks about the arrogance of it, the fact that people have claimed that God is using them. So they're like, look, God is using our church. So this is justified and those kinds of things.
Sure.
And, you know, he sheds light on some really troublesome things, which I think you and I would be are both aware of and go, yeah, that's a problem.
Absolutely.
But so his last paragraph is the body count in the young Restless Reformed leadership is already high. That's how he starts it. And just that sentence is like, that's a kick in the nuts, dude.
It is, man. It really is.
And he's not wrong. That's why. Like, I would be offended if he was making false claims, but like, he's spot on.
He is. And it's cautionary, I think, in the best possible way, you know. And look, I mean, it's always hard for those of us who are writers, and I've been way guilty of this in my career, and I regret some of it, but you know, you always try to make your point with panache and style and sometimes humor and snark and all that. And, you know, I'm sure Carl Truman at some level isn't above that. You know, he has been funny in the past. But you're right. I mean, I think calling it a body count, like, it is spot on, and it's cautionary and it's chilling. And my question to you, Piper, and you can maybe have a little different perspective on this since you grew up in the home that you grew up in. But, like, do you think anyone for the last decade has listened to Carl Truman, or has his message kind of fallen on deaf ears?
Man, I mean, yes, there are still people who listen to Carl Truman. He still has the respect of some, but I think he has the respect of the same people he did 10 years ago, except maybe students he has taught since then. I mean, the church suffers from the same malady that everybody else in culture does, and that is we listen to the new, not to the true. Like, we are not interested in what is best. We are interested in what is shiniest, what is most exciting, what is the newest. And so, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but, like, you take the books that shaped the people we respect most.
Yeah.
And like, R.C. Sproul's The Holiness of God, J.I. Packer's Knowing God could not get published today.
Yeah.
Or if they did, the sales expectation would be 5,000 copies. They would be labeled as academic.
Yep.
And they would be kind of marketed at pastors or whatever. And they might do okay. You know, maybe Al Mohler would say something nice about them and they'd sell a few hundred copies at TGC or whatever. But, like, those books were formative for a generation of pastors.
Yeah.
That is gone for now. I think it'll come back. But
So
Truman is...
That's really sad, man.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a really sad big point that you just made. And finish your statement on Truman, then I've got another question for you related to that.
Voices like Truman are akin to, like, the minor prophets in the Old Testament in that they're saying true things to a rebellious people that have no interest in listening and will internet stone them or throw them in a well or whatever, like internet sell them to the Assyrians.
Exactly. Dude, so my question is anybody filling that void? And I mean, obviously I'm not doing it, so I'm really one to talk here. So I'm definitely not casting the first stone on that level, but, like, who's working on the next Knowing God or Desiring God or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know who's working on it from a writing publishing standpoint. The people who are doing that kind of work, though, are, like, the faithful churches, faithful pastors, faithful professors, faithful college campus ministers, whatever they are, who are just looking at going, I want people to know Jesus.
Yeah.
And so they're dealing in conversations and they're dealing in sermons and they're dealing in counseling and relationships and neighbors and friends, not platforms and podcasts. Ironically, we say on a podcast. But they're not interested in their sermons download numbers. They're interested in, you know, Jane in the third row and Steve in the sixth row and whatever who are part of their congregation.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's, like, the church is fine. Like, the church is not going anywhere. God's mission is not off the rails because young, restless, reformed people are arrogant douchebags. But that's where the faithfulness is happening. And I don't, you know, it's not marketable, you know?
Yeah.
The things that are marketable are not the things that God smiles on, I don't think, for the most part. The best books are not the ones that are going to sell best.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a market reality right now.
Dude, have we ever been in a more sort of, I don't know what it was like in the 50s when television popped. It would have been interesting to be around then. But, like, I can't imagine a more marketing saturated environment than the one we live in. I mean, it just seems like becoming the independent marketing guru is sort of where pastoral careers go to die. You know, that's one of the outcomes, you know.
Because you've discovered a formula for influence, you know, a certain amount of charisma, a certain amount of humor, a certain amount of, like, what, you know, whatever, being gunned up and steroidal, and here you go.
And exactly.
It's funny. I don't love Ryan Russillo. So he's was an ESPN personality. I don't know if he's on The Ringer now or what he is, but he has a podcast and he's sort of a bloviating blowhard guy, but he was talking about Instagram influencers recently. And he just had some really interesting points about kind of what's the arc on this? Like, where does this go? And, you know, and he was like, I think it'll pass, but what if it's the start of something and not just, like, a blip?
Ooh.
And it's
chilling.
You know, thinking about like our kids. So you have mm-hmm. you have kids who are just like same age as my daughter and a little bit older, my older daughter. What does marketing look like for them and influence on them? And yeah, I think it's I think though that as successful as that is numerically,
yeah,
every single bit of research done by psychologists and sociologists and anthropologists and whatever else into people's responses to social media is that people are more empty, more depressed, more needy, more hungry for relationship than ever before. So they're more connected numerically and more disconnected humanly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is? That's an opportunity for the church. And an opportunity for like genuine gospel teaching, the kind that speaks of a real hope, real relationship, real repentance. And that's where if the church just remains like just chugs along, like slow and steady, this the tortoise and the hare kind of thing, which is an old fable, but like it's mm-hmm. still true. And we can win.
Yeah.
Just by being the thing that can't be found on Instagram, being the relationship that is impossible on the internet, being the counsel that you can't get from, you know, wherever. And so there, I don't look at it as hopeless. I just look at it and go, this is the latest in the world's version of BS to feed people on where to find hope.
Yeah, most definitely, man. That's so good. Yeah, so much of what you said there resonated, and you know, for me, just thinking about it from the standpoint of being in the Christian education business, I mean, we need that, right? We need to be there when the kind of Instagram bubble bursts for everybody, and they realize that the fulfillment and the, you know, the excitement, the connection that they sought there is not. It's not real, you know, it's a lie. So yeah, how do we step into that moment and speak truth into it and be loving and be kind? And, I think you're right, man. And it's such a good word, but what you said, like it resonates really deeply with me, I think, cause I'm an old curmudgeonly man at this point, but like, what you said would be such a tough sell because you essentially said, just continue being the church and being good and, you know, seeking truth, seeking the word, seeking the Lord. Like these are not sexy, saleable, like marketing friendly concepts, yet they're the very concepts that are going to keep us alive. You know what I mean? It's an interesting moment to be in where nobody really wants to hear the thing that's the most sensible. And I don't know, I hope we course correct a little bit as a culture. And, you know, we know obviously that this stuff is ingrained in the sinful heart of man. So the course correction isn't going to be much to write home about, but, it sure would be nice to kind of finagle our way out of this moment a little bit.
Yeah. I don't have a ton of hope in culture course correcting. I think the pendulum will swing and maybe mm-hmm. there will be corrective aspects of that. But I mean, it's like we've talked about with generations, you know, people whine and moan about millennials. Well, millennials are a response to baby boomers, and baby boomers were a response to the greatest generation, who were a response to whatever. Like every generation pendulum swings from the one before. And with that, along with the advancement of technology, there's going to be changes, but like people aren't getting any better.
No, they're not. And at this point, I mean, it's tied to everybody's job, right? I mean, you can swing a cat in any direction and hit a marketing guy and, you know, they're not going to stop doing what they do or creating content or being leadership gurus or whatever. I mean, this thing is vocational now for so many people that, as you know, like people like to continue eating and paying their mortgage. So like the thing is going to self-perpetuate at some level.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the quotes or one of the comments that Truman made was a quote from one of the – he doesn't name names in that, but the young restless reformed leader who's like, we are using fame and platform to spread the message of the gospel.
Yeah.
Which on its face is a fine statement.
Yeah.
But the more data that stacks up, the more you go, that doesn't work very well.
Because, yeah, it just seems so dangerous.
Because, you know? Yeah, exactly. It's like fighting fire with fire, but all you're really doing is spreading the forest fire. Like, it's not working the way you think it's working.
Yeah.
You know, or making a deal with the devil to be good at something. It's – and so, again, that's just a reminder of, like, what – the call for the Christian is so simple. It's not easy. But it's really simple in terms of what we're called to be and to do. And when we start to add to that, you know, I'm going to use fame in this way. I'm going to use whatever. Like, if fame happens to you, then I don't know that you need to run for the hills.
Yeah.
But fame doesn't matter. Like, let fame come, let fame go. It's a thing that happens. It's not a thing that you make. It shouldn't be. Like, my dad is famous in a tribe of people.
Mm-hmm.
And he does strategically think about, when I speak, am I speaking to people who are influencing other people? But he's thinking about individuals, not numbers. He's not going, how can I speak to the biggest crowd? He's thinking, who are ministers, who are campus ministers, who are pastors, who are church planters. And he's so suspicious of fame.
Yeah, rightfully so.
And I'm really grateful to have grown up in a home where fame was a thing that we didn't care about.
Yeah.
Because I think I would buy into it otherwise.
Oh, and, most definitely.
And it's just, you don't use fame. Fame uses you. Unless you have just separated yourself from it and said, this is the thing God has called me to. Fame is a thing that exists over there somewhere.
And yeah, that's right. Happens. Yeah, and I've always told people, you know, who ask about this, like, fame never happens by accident either. I mean, these guys who have it, they wanted it. And it's interesting to me how, like, the older generation of our tribe, like, those are the guys who have handled it well, right? Like, the John Pipers, the Timmies.
Because that's when fame did happen by accident.
Exactly. Yeah, you write Desire and God and people love it and word of mouth happens. And before you know it, you sold a whole bunch of copies.
And
you're
it
right,
happened,
though.
It happened slow. It happened slow for my dad. It happened slow for Tim Keller. It happened slow for John MacArthur. Whatever you think of MacArthur, it happened slow for him. Slow for Sproul. Slow for Packer. Like, these guys were small-time, faithful ministers in their context who got famous by accident. Yeah. That is not the way it happens anymore. And like you said, it's no longer accidental. It's now leveraged.
Yeah, it's very calculated in 2019, and that makes it exponentially grosser. Pipe, I hope you're ready for us to be famous, though. When we get this Ferdy movie deal signed, sealed, and delivered, I mean, the fame is going to come flying at us.
I'm here for the artistic value of this thing. I am not here for the fame.
Absolutely. We're here because
I'm here to – I'm an artist. I'm going to pour myself into this thing. I'm going to give it everything I've got. And if fame happens, like, it just happens. It's not a
thing
I'm
really
aspiring.
We've got a really important film to make, Piper.
Yeah.
I mean, this film is going to be – it's going to be very important. So if the fame happens and the decadence and the excesses, then so be it. One more quick question on that. Have you ever published anything at First Things, speaking of fame and smugness?
I have not. So I don't get to check that box on my smug resume.
Yeah, me neither, man. That's a gap on my smug resume too. Maybe we should work on that first. But nevertheless, Pipe – this has been fun, man. It's always interesting to suss these things with a fellow believer who understands the industry, you know. And I think understanding the industry, it gives a little different, perspective to the whole Harris debacle. And to be clear, we are sad about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad whenever this kind of deconversion narrative happens, and the inevitable apostasy memoir will be forthcoming, I'm sure. Which is a thing that everyone in the MFA community just salivates over, but obviously that makes me really sad. So, I'm sure that'll be out within the year.
Yeah. The way that his announcements have been curated is really set up for an announcement of,
the definitive,
a speaking tour, a podcast, a book, whatever, like a project set to, you know, to make content out of this.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, what kind of emergent era wackos career could he resurrect with this? And we're getting real deep into the weeds of cynicism here, and we may even need to cut this out.
What do you mean by emergent era wacko? Like, give me
Brian McLaren's laying in the weeds. Robbie Bell's kind of like been trying to do the TV thing for a decade. He's laying in the weeds. Like, there could be some kind of co-headlining tour. I think it's going to be Robbie B. They're both on the West Coast.
Yeah,
you know,
That's possible. I think
they're both kind of at the same place.
I think,
which is
Bell, but Harris is more definitive though, and he was way more conservative to start. And like his arc was very different.
Yeah,
I feel like it's got to be somebody who was a little bit more in line with. Now, I mean, Bell could be there's more monetization possibilities there.
For sure.
McLaren's an interesting case because he's sort of like the Yoda of that crowd. He's a little bit old school.
Doug, I don't know if he can sell
Doug
a book.
Padgett
anymore.
Is like, I don't know that he's big enough of a name. Tony Jones.
Those guys were second tier, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they were influential sort of thinkers, but not names.
They were like the us of their movement.
You know, I could see him. I'm trying to think. What's the Lutheran lady tatted up pastor?
Nadia Boltz-Weber?
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be interesting.
I feel like that could be an interesting one. Like a podcast featuring the two of them and then like a book or a speaking tour or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, to be fair, she has not said she's left the faith. She has left evangelicalism, and she's not, you know, she does not consider herself conservative. So I don't want to misrepresent. He said he's not a Christian anymore. She has not. So
yeah. And Robbie B is still kind of nibbling around the edges of Christianity too.
Nobody knows what he is. He doesn't know what he is. He doesn't say what he is. He doesn't. You know, that's just everything is a question. Like, he's just a walking question mark.
He's a walking question mark. That's why this could be so magical. You know, he could ask the questions and Harris could answer him, but yeah, wild rampant speculation at this point, Piper, but we have done what we always do on this program in that we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics, without Ronald J. Martin. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I'm Dr. Lauren DeVille, a practicing naturopathic physician in Tucson, Arizona. In my podcast, Christian Natural Health, my guests and I discuss topics ranging from nutrition, sleep, hormone balancing, and exercise to specific health concerns like hair loss, anxiety, and hypothyroidism. I'll also interweave biblical principles as they apply throughout the podcast because true health is body, mind, and spirit. Listen to Christian Natural Health for free at lifeaudio.com or on your favorite podcast platform.